Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend. Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt, so throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hello, and welcome to the Cookbook Circle podcast. I'm Hannah.
And I'm Victoria.
And we've set out to review the UK's most popular cookbooks, those that you probably have at home and haven't opened in a while. We take one cookbook each episode to cook from and to stress test, digging out their best recipes, bringing them to life again, and hopefully inspiring you to do so too.
Hi, Hannah.
Hello, Victoria.
How are you doing this fine day?
It's not a fine day. It's very grey.
It's very grey.
I mean, apart from that, it's fine, but yeah. How are you?
I'm good. Also disappointed at the weather, but the alternative in the rest of Europe is, you know, 50 degrees and bad times. So, I don't know what I prefer. Anyway, what do you have to tell me about this week?
What do I have to tell you about? It's been 2 weeks since my last confession.
Hail Mary Berries. That's your punishment.
Hi, Hail Mary Berries. That's pretty good, man. I was going to talk about this great article that I saw on Thrillist called Why Cookbook Stores Are the Antidote That We Need Right Now. But then I decided I wasn't going to talk to people about an article that they could read themselves. So we'll just share that one out.
Yeah.
And you can all enjoy its lovely kind of escapism. But I was very excited to see that a book that both you and I have is coming out with a kind of a second version.
Ooh.
And that's One Tin Bakes by Ed Kimber.
Oh, yeah.
Because you have this as well, don't you?
Yeah, I do.
Have you made anything from it?
No.
I can't remember.
No, because I always pick it up when I've got something I want to make, something I'm like, oh, and then I feel like things I want to make take too long, or there's an ingredient that I know I won't be able to get, and I just make the tartine brownies. That's what I do.
That's your one tin bake.
That's my one. Yeah.
Well, I have it, but I seem to have bought the, because this one tin that is the right size, right, that all the recipes work for.
Yeah.
And somehow, and I still can't figure out how, I bought the wrong size tin. And
though
it's just a mystery. But anyway, so I need to get a better tin because I've made a couple of things from it and they were great. The cheesecake squares that I made for like our picnic that we had last year.
Yes.
That was from that book. But all that to say that Ed Kimber, who previously, I think he won the first series of the Bake Off, he's coming out with an easy version of this now. So all of your problems of not having the time, not finding the ingredient will presumably disappear.
No, and proving brioche dough for 2 days before you cook the nice morning bombs that he's got in there that I'm desperate to make.
No, I don't think so. 70 bakes, vegan, gluten-free stuff in there as well. Nigella Lawson has said it's the sort of book that becomes a true friend in the kitchen.
Oh.
I feel like that's the dream, isn't it, to get the Nigella quote for the front cover. But yeah, it's out on the 14th of October. And I'm really excited about that because, you know, everyone needs a one tin bake.
Yeah, they do. I guess that's going to go up against the one tin bake. What is it called? We always forget the name of what
it's called. Oh, the roasting tin.
The roasting tin. Yeah, because she's bringing a sweets book out. Also, I guess in time for Christmas. So those two will go up against each other.
It's actually really interesting if you are interested in which cookbooks are coming out, that Eat Your Books has an email that does like roundups of the books that are coming out each season. And I was looking at it earlier and there was loads, like really exciting ones for Christmas as well. There's one by Anya Dunk coming out that's like all German Christmas bakes.
Oh, fun.
Which I think would be so good to have.
They're very good at Christmas stuff, the Germans.
Yeah. They are. I was about to do my German accent, but we'll pull that one back. No, 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 no. Our 14 listeners in Germany would be very offended. But yeah, there's lots of good stuff coming out, I guess, because yeah, as you say, it's the run up to Christmas now. But that one looks great and I'm very excited about it.
Fun. Food. We'll get that. You can get a new tin to celebrate.
The actual right tin. But
fun. No, that's not the book we're talking about today. No.
No. I know, I said it. I was still on it.
We have another book to talk about in more depth today. I feel like we're quite excited. Are we excited? Are you excited?
I'm very excited.
Yeah,
I am.
Me too.
It's just exciting to have quite a niche book, I think, and not such a generalist one that like feels like you could just make anything. And obviously this, I think kind of Middle Eastern, like Eastern Mediterranean food is like my absolute favorite. So yeah. I am very, very excited.
It's great. Yeah. So the book that we're talking about this episode is Jerusalem.
Jerusalem.
You want to sing? You want to sing the Jerusalem?
Jerusalem, Jerusalem.
That's it. You've nailed it.
It's not as good as our big Billy bass bass, whatever.
By Yotam Ottolenghi, our old friend, and Sami Tamimi, who is his longtime partner in crime and delis.
Partner in delis.
So usually what we do, as you know, is talk about the chef a little bit on the pod when we do a book. And this book has two chefs and one we've already talked about. So we are not going to talk about the life and times of Yotam Ottolenghi today. Unfortunately for Hannah, she's doing a sad face.
I'm doing such a sad face.
But what she's going to do instead is go and listen to episode 2. Not instead, she's going to stay here for this this episode.
This is a solo, the epic solo. Bye.
If it's not Yotam Ottolenghi, she's not interested. She's logging off. And I am going to briefly tell you a little bit about Sami Tamimi. Great name.
Such a fun name to say.
Strong name.
All parents should think about how fun a name is to say before they name their children. Sammy's parents did great.
Shout out to Sammy's parents. So, should I tell you just a little bit?
You can tell me as much as you want.
Well, there's not as much to say. Well, there's not as much info out there because, of course, he's not as starry as his partner, Yotam. But very interesting. So, he is a he. So that's key to know, I guess, in the first instance. Because Sammy is obviously a gender-neutral name. Could be either. So it's a he's a male chef, Palestinian, who grew up in the old city in Jerusalem with into a Muslim family. He got into food. There's not any like romantic story about anywhere that I could find about how he got into food. Basically,
he started eating as a baby. Yeah, that was it. Leaned on to some solids and then just and haven't stopped since.
We've been eating. Still eating today. But in all seriousness, so he started working as a porter in a hotel in Jerusalem.
Oh.
And so the story goes, quickly moved up to being head chef.
Oh, that classic career path.
Yeah.
Porter to head chef.
Yeah. So he must have been really good at what he did. But yeah, again, there's no Marvel backstory to his superhero-ness. And so after he was chef in this hotel, he moved a few times and started working at a restaurant in Tel Aviv called Lilith. I hope that's how you pronounce it. He was head chef there. I'm sure it was great. No real information about, I guess it was kind of Middle Eastern food. And then one day, here's where the romantic story comes in. Oh, yeah. One day, an English customer comes in to Lilith in Tel Aviv and basically offers Sammy a job in London and says, come and work for me. And he says, yes. And so he moved to London in 1997 and took up the head chef role at Baker & Spice.
Oh, is that where he was? Okay, cool.
I don't know where the original one is, but they now have branches in like Chelsea and Maida Vale and Belgravia, not places that I frequent.
No. That whole side of the city that we never go near.
Yeah, I'm sure it's like 15 quid for a sandwich, but thrilled for him. And it was here, this is what I didn't know, that he met our friend Yotam. So he was head chef and then Yotam Ottolenghi visited there. And then I read a few articles about how they met and whatever. And Ottolenghi saying that like he walked into this place and I guess the food that Sammy had been cooking was really like reminiscent of home and felt very like magical and like not like anything he'd got before. And I guess like the late 90s in London. And so he was like, oh my gosh. And then Yotam Ottolenghi started working there.
So Sammy to me just has this magical, like magnetic power when he works in a kitchen that draws people to him to be like, let's do something together.
Yeah.
That's
great. Come on in. So Sammy was in charge of savory and Yotam was in charge of pastry because as we know, he's a pastry chef by trade, like you, Sam.
Yeah, by trade or by hobby. By occasionally baking once a month.
But so, yeah, that's how their partnership started and it's gone into a long, beautiful friendship. Sammy is now, or has been, head chef of the Ottolenghi kind of empire of delis in London. And this book is the second book they've written together. So they wrote Ottolenghi and then this one. But I think he's been involved on lots of them. He's obviously not as kind of, like I said, like starry as Ottolenghi, but it's so... reading about him is so interesting and he's so like passionate about Palestinian food. And it sounds like such an interesting journey for him because he didn't realize, I don't think, until a bit later in life, how connected he was to the food of his childhood. Right. So he moved out of his family home. He left his family home and was disconnected from his family for like almost 20 years because after he realized he was gay, he didn't think that his family would accept that. So he didn't speak to his Muslim family for a really, really long time. I think based on what I read that they're back in touch now, but yeah, so that I think he was maybe more focused on that. But then, yeah, this kind of Palestinian Jerusalem food, like really, I guess, evoked something in him. Like they didn't realize till later, or whether it was that he was cooking that way and he didn't realize that it was influence. Different or special. But it turns out that, like we said, he's kind of magical. And so on Ottolenghi and Yotam, I read a Bon Appetit article that describes that watching them cooking together as like watching the Rolling Stones in concert.
Okay. Remember when I said that I saw Ottolenghi and I said that it was like seeing Mick Jagger? So
there you
I feel
go.
Really validated now. Thank you.
Bon Appetit. Bon Appetit, you know, they validated you. Yeah. And just how they riff off each other and, you know, Sammy particularly seems like incredibly like creative and more kind of throw, you know, likes color a lot like, you know, Ottolenghi, but he sounds brilliant and I'd like to be his friend.
Because I guess that's the savory sweet side of the kind of divide as well, isn't it? People always say that you can kind of riff a little bit more in savory.
Yeah.
But if you're, you know, in pastry or baking in general, you have to be a bit more precise. So that's probably a good balance between the two of them then.
Yeah, exactly. And then he brought out another cookbook last year in 2020 with Tara Wigley, who was also, I think, part of the Ottolenghi gang.
Empire.
Yeah. And that is called Falestin. And that is it's all about Palestinian food. And I've seen it. It's an absolutely beautiful book, like lime green cover. But I've never opened it or had a look at it. But I'm sure, based on this book, I'm sure it's absolutely incredible.
Yeah, I'd love that.
Yeah, so there's not that much about Sammy Tamimi as there is about Yucatan, but I thought it's very, very interesting. But this book, I thought we could talk about just because it's, well, it's a beautiful book. I love to get it. I said that on the last episode, but you know, I feel like in the context of, we've done a lot of kind of French cooking and we'd had like the joy of cooking, which was,
quite general.
Yeah.
Like general all encompassing. So it's nice to kind of explore one area and kind of specialized book, I guess.
Going deep. Yeah. It was, I loved it. So the book came out in 2012 and it shot to the top of the bestseller list, both in the UK and the USA.
Wow.
I guess it was based off of Yotam Ottolenghi's like previous hits, right?
Totally.
It was going to be a hit.
His back catalogue.
It's so beautiful. And I thought, and I don't know if you felt this, like it was very, it's like a, feels like a very emotional book. Like they've, both of them have really kind of poured their heart and soul into it.
Yeah. Because there's that whole kind of history pre-text bit at the start, right? Because obviously it's difficult to talk about Jerusalem and just talk about the food because it's so wrapped up in the whole city's history and culture and current state as well. And they acknowledge that with kind of, they've got a bit on ownership, they've got a bit on the kind of recipes themselves and how it's hard to kind of attribute them to any certain kind of people, that, it, that everything is a mix there.
Yeah.
And then they've got like a whole history bit on like Israel and Palestine as well, don't they? Yeah.
That history bit is a lot of that I didn't know.
Same.
It's like the whole history of like Jerusalem from, you know, millennia ago. Millennia, I don't know how far it goes back, but it's pretty far. And you have, like you said, you have to acknowledge it. And I'm happy that they did, because it would have been weird if they didn't.
Absolutely.
We're not going to put our two pence into that, the situation. We're not qualified to do that. But
no, we are not.
There's a lot more. What I liked, what I learned, I guess, from that first bit, the instruction and the ownership bit, is that there's so many more cultures than I thought.
Yes.
In Jerusalem, and I guess in Israel and Palestine, as it is, like the, you know about the Arabs and the Jews and the Christians, but then there's just, many different food cultures. And I was like kind of blown away by it.
Yeah, absolutely. And they kind of acknowledge in that recipes bit that they haven't, like this one particular area, Ashkenazi food, that they haven't really touched on because they just don't know enough about it. But I did like that they called that out rather than just saying or trying to do something that they weren't familiar with. I thought it was interesting as well because they talk about how they grew up, they didn't know each other in Jerusalem, right? But they grew up on different sides of the city. Yotam was in the Jewish part and then Sami Tamimi was in the Muslim part. So it's quite interesting to have that balance, and they must have been exposed to different things and had different kind of influences growing up as well.
Yeah, and you get that throughout the book. There's always a nice little, for all the recipes, there's a nice little intro, right? And and so you can, it's always in the third person. So it'll be like, Sammy's mom made this when they would go on picnics, or Yotam's dad, who was Italian. So you get that, he talks about that a lot and how that influenced stuff. And it, and that, I guess that just goes to show how much of like a, I don't like the word melting pot, but you know, like,
no.
Blend. Or fusion, because they even say, don't they, like, it's not that kind of melting pot, everyone's not hanging out together and sharing food, like everybody's in their own separate kind of group eating their own separate food, and there is some crossovers, but food doesn't bring people together in the same way in Jerusalem as you would maybe hope.
Like, let's not romanticize it here, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
They have funny bits as well on like hummus wars about kind of the different views on hummus, and there's one section that's like baba ganoush ? they talk about kind of baba ganoush and the kind of different ways of approaching that, and then the next recipe is just called like burnt aubergine and something. They're not even going to call that dish baba ganoush, and they say that they kind of do somewhat adapt the recipes for here because of ingredients that we might be able to get a little bit more easily, or I don't know, I guess European or American taste, I guess, as well. I feel like actually that whole first section is just like a whole bunch of caveats. I mean, like,
like, don't come for us.
Exactly. Stay away. We've called it out. Okay. Leave us alone.
Yeah. Also, just to say, it's a really pretty book. I love the picture. So there's pictures of food, obviously, because it's an Ottolenghi book, but there's lots of pictures of the city of Jerusalem and the people of Jerusalem and people eating and cooking. And I just think it's really, really lovely.
So atmospheric. There's loads of just like street kind of photos of kind of older men playing like games on the street or like markets and stuff like
kitchens
that.
Kitchens and...
Oh, it's just lovely.
Yeah, it's great.
I'm just sitting here like stroking it.
Have you been to Jerusalem, Israel, anywhere?
No, I haven't. I would really like to go. The closest I've got has been like Jordan and the UAE. But Jordan was amazing, but obviously you can't compare. I would really, really like to go. And tell me if I'd love
to. Yeah, me too. I think it'd be great. About what we cooked.
Let's talk about what we cooked.
Hannah, what did you cook? How many things did you cook?
Well, I had a couple of things made, and then Vic kept talking about this feast that she was making.
No. Hey, don't out me.
No, I'm only joking. I actually only made a few things.
How many things?
I made technically I made three things.
Okay.
But the second two were quite small. And then there was like a sauce that you had to make for one of the things. So that was like a fourth thing, if you will.
Such a go-to shoes.
Shut up. I know that you've made more. We'll soon find out. So the first thing that I had to make that sauce for the kind of first main recipe was zug.
Oh, zug.
Zug, which I feel like is such a buzz.
Yes.
Ingredient at the moment, or buzz like sauce. And I actually didn't really fully know what it was. I'd had it on different things, but it's always just kind of like an, you know, accent or kind of like an additional flavor. It's basically quite a green sauce. You just blitz everything up. It's coriander, parsley, two hot green chilies, which they make themselves known, some ground cumin, cardamom, cloves, caster sugar, salt, a garlic clove crushed.
Which, of course,
I had a mini rant about this to Vic, but every Ottolenghi recipe I use, and that is a lot, if anyone knows me, they always have a crushed garlic clove, which, I mean, I know what a crushed garlic clove is, and that's fine, but they don't always seem to make sense, because sometimes it seems like it should be like finely, I don't know, minced or something, and it's not. And I think if I reach back to the far dusty corners of my memory, I think that I've seen him talk about this somewhere, but I couldn't find it, about how he loves crushed garlic cloves, but boy does he. Anyway, so the crushed garlic clove, olive oil and some water, and you just blitz everything up into this kind of green sauce. It's quite thin, it's not like super chunky or anything, and it's just like a condiment, I guess. They use it as a dressing and different things, but originally done, it was done with grinding stones, so not in like a ninja bullet like I use. And it's great. It's very spicy, so you can't use that much of it. But it was quite an important flavor in this, in the thing that I was making it for, which was sabi, or I think known as sabich. I always knew it as sabich before, and I looked it up, and it can be called either, which is like basically just a lovely pita bread with fried aubergine and hard-boiled egg and tahini, which I'm obsessed with. And when I saw that recipe in here, I was just like, oh my God, I absolutely saw it and thought of you.
Yeah, I was like, I bet Hannah will make that. And I know, because I know that you love it.
I do love it, because I've had it in the Good Egg here in London, and it was just really good. I think the bread is really important. Like, loads of times, pitches that we buy in the supermarket are not that great. They're just quite thin and dry. Thin and dry, or dog shit, yeah.
Like a dog shit. Like a dog shit. And not big enough. The pouches aren't wide enough to stuff.
In my brief time as a chef, my first job was to make at like 6 a.m. loads of pita breads in this Middle Eastern restaurant in central London. And I was terrible at it, because you had to just like do them in a very hot bread oven. And it was all like just a matter of time of not burning them. And you were just like shoveling in and out batches. And it was all just timing of shaping them, like the whole counter would be covered in like tons of pita balls. And it was just like, oh God, I'm sure one day I'll get back to making pita. But that has etched itself on my memory. So I bought the pita breads for this one, actually just in a supermarket. And it was, I can't remember the brand. I should remember the brand, but I'll put it up on Instagram. And they were just like really, really fluffy soft. So, so excited to get them. What you do is you just kind of peel away some of the skin of the aubergine. So it creates like a kind of a zebra effect, which Ottolenghi loves to do. And I think it's because obviously the skin of an aubergine isn't that nice to eat when it's roasted, but you still have some texture there. Some of it's there. And then you just sprinkle them with salt on both sides and you kind of leave them to for the water to come out for about half an hour. And then you start frying that in batches. Mm-hmm. And then you make like a chopped salad. Tomatoes, cucumbers, spring onions, parsley, lemon juice, olive oil, which I feel like this chopped salad kind of appears in different ways. It's always, it's a mainstay of.
Yeah, you know, they mention it, I think, in that introduction bit we've just talked about for ages. But yeah, it's no matter what group you belong to in Jerusalem, you have a chopped salad that is cucumber, tomato, probably parsley and lemon.
Yeah, exactly. But it's important here because it kind of provides a really nice like freshness. And then you make like a tahini sauce, which is kind of just like tahini and lemon juice and some water to kind of thin it out. And you hard boil some eggs and just kind of quarter them up. And he says to get, or they say to get amber or a savory mango pickle, which I went to a couple of kind of specialist supermarkets and I couldn't find, but I got like a spicy mango chutney, which was delicious. And then you just like pile it all into a pita, just that aubergine, the egg, the tahini sauce, which just is amazing. That's it. You're meant to just have the chopped salad on the side and then just kind of spoon it in.
Nice.
And as you're with kind of each bite. And honestly, it was just so great. I just love it so much. It's just so good.
And I was like really like reminiscing about this pizza right now. And she's got her hands over her eyes. Like, I guess so she's imagining it. Really early in the morning we're recording. I'm like, I want it now.
Honestly, it's great. And it's not that labor intensive. I just made it kind of one lunchtime. And like I would never think aubergine and egg and tahini, you know, go obviously together. Tahini. Obviously they're onto something, but I mean, I had never thought of it as a combination before, but it just works so well. And if you fry, I think frying your aubergines right is a big thing there as well, because you don't want any kind of like undercooked or like, aubergines just have to be fried with loads of fat. Let's just accept it. I'm convinced that people that don't like aubergines have only kind of ever eaten them undercooked and just like a bit.
Or just like stewed within an inch of their life and it's just like soggy and like, slimy.
Slimy.
That sounds great. I feel like we've opened the floodgates to sandwiches on the pod.
Oh no. You beat me. I was going to joke and be like, I'm going to be like, yeah, I followed Vixie. So we'll just do sandwiches. But I mean, you know,
love sandwiches.
There's nothing wrong with sandwiches. And if something isn't a sandwich, I'm probably going to pile it on bread and make it like an open sandwich anyway. Oh, honestly, this was great. I really hope that we can find the recipe online and put it on the website, because I think this has to be one of my favorite things that I've made in the podcast, I think. So yeah, that was great. And then...
And so the zoog goes on that?
Sorry, the zoog goes on there as well, which is... So you've got like the kind of creaminess of the tahini, the like freshness of the salad, the spiciness of the zoog, and then this kind of sweet, spicy mango pickle thing going on as well. So there's just loads of contrast of flavor and it's just bloody great. Yeah, so the second thing, the kind of other things that I made were just quite small, just kind of little veggie dishes, which I think are meant to be kind of made and served as part of a mezze. But the other thing was fried cauliflower with tahini again.
Nice.
And that is quite simple again. It's fairly similar in that you have to make a kind of another tahini sauce with tahini, garlic, crushed
garlic.
Chopped herbs, yogurt, lemon juice, zest, pomegranate molasses, and some salt and pepper. And then you just fry up cauliflower in sunflower oil. And you fry, after you've kind of done frying the cauliflower in batches, then you fry some spring onions as well.
Mm.
And you just let them cool a little bit. And then you stir them through the tahini sauce and you just serve it like that with some lemon juice, a little bit more lemon juice, and then finished with a little bit of mint and pomegranate molasses. And it was, yeah, really delicious.
Yeah, it sounds great.
I mean, one of my like lazy weeknight meals is always just like roasting cauliflower and just like pour some tahini over it. So I feel like it was like that, like next level. And it was, yeah, really, really good. Hard to get a decent photo of that one. I'm going to warn everyone again, just kind of a little bowl of beige mush. But
yeah, but delicious.
Bloody delicious. The last thing that I made was just fried tomatoes with garlic.
Oh, crushed garlic.
Okay. Oh my God, was it crushed garlic? Yes! It was three large garlic cloves crushed. Thank you. And this is just because the tomatoes are so lovely right now. And
yes.
I'm obsessed. You know, just ripe tomatoes are a great thing. We say, you know, that's our episode mention of ripe tomatoes, which we like to bring up all the time. And this one is really super simple as well. You just mix garlic and crushed chili and chopped parsley in a bowl, and you kind of set that aside. And then you slice the tomatoes quite thickly, heat some olive oil in a pan, and then just put the tomato slices in, season them, fry them for like a minute or so, then turn them over, season them again, and then you pour over that mixture of the herbs and the chili and the garlic. And then you just cook them like really quickly until they get kind of color, and but not mushy, they say. Soft but not mushy. Bad name of the week.
Bad name of the week.
Thank you. And then you just serve them straight away, and you kind of pour the lovely juices from the pan over. And
oh, nice.
It's just super, super, super simple, but really quick and really delicious. I feel like if you serve, you know, that and the cauliflower and a couple of other bits up, if you were entertaining, that would just be my absolute dream meal.
My mouth is like watering, you're talking about that. So I was also thinking you could also add some zug to those tomatoes, and I bet it's so good.
I've been putting zug on everything now because you make too much for the recipe, right? So it's just sitting there in the fridge, and I just, random things, just my cereal, you know. But just lots of little
sounds
dishes.
Sounds so good.
I did find that, I mean, we have acknowledged previously that Ottolenghi recipes can be known as a little bit kind of full on and labor intensive and loads of ingredients and stuff like that. But obviously with Sami Tamimi's influence, there's a lot of simple ones in here as well. Like, you know, you can just make for a supper a couple of things. And I loved it. They were all great.
Great. I think we talked about this when we did Ottolenghi previously, but this came out in 2012. And I wonder if the ingredients have just become more common. Like, I was thinking about it and thinking, I mean, we'll talk about what I cooked, and I didn't really have any trouble getting anything apart from one thing. And I just wonder if that is, again, their influence on our cooking, that we can get za'atar and, you know, all the spices that we've mentioned.
Yeah.
And like, you only struggled with mango pickle.
Yeah, I really think so. I really think it is their influence, because there was something you said at the beginning about Sami coming to London and like they're not being, you know, I guess maybe that's why he was approached by that British restaurateur or whatever as well in Israel, was because there was a big gap in the market probably for that kind of food here at a certain level. And I think they've made it quite mainstream now.
Yeah, now everyone's doing it.
Yeah. Oh, it's just so good. It's just
so
the best.
Good.
Death row meal for sure would be just like loads of this kind of food. It's amazing. But anyway, enough of my fangirling. What did you make?
I'm fangirling today as well. Like, I don't know if it's the context or just this book is great. I think also what's interesting and what's good to know about this book is that there's meat in it and fish, whereas that's not a common thing with Ottolenghi's books generally. But there's a whole meat section, there's a whole fish section. There is a massive vegetable section as well. And obviously you managed to make lots of veggie and vegan stuff. And me too, actually. I thought that was interesting. I didn't expect it when I got it, but I guess that's what Jerusalem is like. There's a lot of like meat and rice. Anyway, what did I cook? I cook four things, but like, so it's not like loads, but I'm going to like, you know, rush through because, you know, so like some are a bit smaller, it's simpler, and I don't need to talk about them. So the reason, so
it's not mentions, like that's why we're here. Anyway.
Yeah, exactly. It's just bye. So I had some people coming over for lunch when I was cooking last week. And it, well, it was my in-laws and my husband's nan, and they were popping in for lunch. And so I took the opportunity because I was like, I need to cook some stuff. I'm going to cook this. I think they'll like it.
Full brownie points here.
Yeah, exactly.
With the in-laws.
It's like getting up at 5 a.m. cooking. So I cooked this, did a bit of a spread for them. This is what's good about this book. You can just kind of pick things out and make it and serve it as it is. I don't know if any of this stuff kind of went together, but it worked.
A bit like Moro that way. Yes. Moro, there were just so many things you could pick and choose to kind of serve together.
Yeah. So the first thing I cooked was the butternut squash and tahini spread.
Oh, did you? Yeah. I loved that. Nice.
Yeah. It was great. You roast a butternut squash, you add tahini, yogurt, and garlic, crushed garlic.
A lot of similar ingredients here.
Yeah. You serve it with sesame and coriander, and then you're supposed to drizzle it with a date syrup, but I couldn't find any of that. So, but he said in the book, you can use, I think, maple syrup or something like that. But yeah. I put hot honey on it because I was like, that's going to go down a treat.
I thought that was your nickname for me.
Yeah, you
thought that was just between us, but.
Awkward. No.
No. Hot honey sounds great, though.
Yeah, it is. I've got this, what do you call it? Bottle of squeezy honey from a company, this like Welsh company who like pivoted during lockdown to make hot honey. They're called Bee and Bonnet and they're Welsh, and it's great for things like pizzas and anyway. Yes, so I just put some of that on top. Not too spicy. They do an extra hot one, which I won't be going anywhere near. But yeah, I think what let it down was my butternut squash wasn't very good. It was a bit tasteless.
Oh,
I don't know
no.
if it's a bit old or is what, you know, it's not quite the right time of year. You can get butternut squash all year round now, but you know, sometimes when the butternut squash hits, it's like that's so sweet and you roast it and like the taste is incredible. Didn't quite get that, so I feel like I missed out.
Nobody likes an old squash.
Yeah. Old squash. That's what they called me in school. But I would absolutely make it again. It looks very cool and impressive.
Yeah. Beautiful.
And who doesn't like a kind of hummus adjacent like dip? that you don't have to like. You'd have to like cook the chickpeas and, you know.
Yeah.
When you could just go buy some hummus.
Totally.
That was great. We'll definitely make it again. The next thing I made was the, I might butcher this pronunciation, so I'm so sorry. The mujadara, which is like a rice dish.
Oh, yes.
It's spelled Mejadra.
Okay.
It's like a rice dish that the story is about how Sami's family would take it on picnics with them, and his dad would have a watermelon for dessert and cool it off in the stream. And I was like, this is like, what an idyllic life. I didn't call an aubergine in a stream.
You weren't doing that in Birmingham when you were a child? cooling watermelons off in the stream.
in the stream. Not a lot of streams, I'll be honest. Unless you're talking about, you know. Yeah, I know. Bad things. So this is great. I really like this. It's like a rice and lentil dish with shitloads of fried onions in it, with like a really deep spiced flavor to it. Like, it's great. A little bit labor intensive. So you have to, I think it's about a kilogram of onions you have to kind of fry in a couple of centimeters of oil. So you chop them. You flour them a little bit, and then you've got to like batch cook. It's about four onions, big onions.
Right.
It's a lot. I mean, it's worth it because that shit's delicious. But so you do all that, you leave them to kind of cool off. And then whilst doing that, you also cook some green lentils in water so they're cooked through. Then when you've done with your onions, you kind of toast off in the same pan some cumin and coriander
seeds.
Yeah. Toast them off, and then you kind of add some basmati rice, olive oil, turmeric, allspice, cinnamon, and sugar.
Mm.
You add in the lentils, some hot water. No, just hot water, just water. You add in some water, put the lid on, and let that simmer away for like 15 minutes.
Okay.
And then you have to be like the quickest little superhero. But after 15 minutes, you have to take it off the heat, take the lid off, put a tea towel on, put the lid back on so you don't lose all the steam.
Right.
And you like leave it to steam for like 10 minutes so it finishes off cooking. And then you stir through like half of the onions and then top it with the rest of the onions.
Oh, great.
It's great. It's really good. It's like comfort food levels of good. Yes. It reminds me of like the palau that like my in-laws and my husband's family all make. And it's just like so good. Yeah, those like deep, rich kind of spices. It was great. A bit cooler even because yes. I cooked it earlier in the day. But the frying onions bit is a bit of a ball ache, but they do make it. Like,
yeah,
they give you that like oily onion.
I wonder if there's any like freelance onion fryers.
Can you air fry onions? I don't have an air fryer. I don't know why I said that. I'd like to try one.
Or just someone to come and chop onions.
Yeah.
You know, that would be nice.
Yeah, when you need slices, because then, you know, you can't use your mini chopper to help.
Much you need slices.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Like, what can I use this for? It got a lot of use, let me tell you, this week.
That sounds great, though.
Absolutely make it again. I did have some yogurt, but they say to serve it with some yogurt, I guess, to like, because it's not spicy at all, but it's like obviously quite heavily spiced.
Yeah.
Yogurt and I guess whatever you want. Yeah, it's nice. The next thing I made was the fish and caper kebabs.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Fun.
I know. A little bit of a, I don't know. I don't think I've done fish before, apart from the salmon cones for So what I thought was there was a lot of like really good like meatball stuff in here, like a lot of different types of meatballs and fish balls in both of the sections, and I was drawn to a lot of it and I was really keen. But like I said, I had people over and my husband's nan is pescatarian, so I was like, okay. And also there's a metric shit ton of dill in this recipe. Ugh. And I was like, I want to make dill. I want to go buy a big bunch of dill and have my whole house smell like dill and really happy about it. So I was excited. So I went for these. These are so simple and easy and fun. Mm. And again, the mini chopper was great because you just chop everything up in it. I chopped the fish in it in the end.
Oh.
It's white fish, any white fish. I use cod, I think. Chopped it up into slices and then just kind of minced it in the chopper because I was like, I'm not going to sit here and like finely mince. Nah, I haven't got the time for that. So did this. And then the rest of the ingredients all just go in at once. But I kind of chopped everything up. So it's fish, capers, dill, breadcrumbs, lemon, cumin, turmeric, and just salt and pepper brought together with an egg.
Nice.
So it's just like a classic fishy meatball thing. Interesting. I thought he writes that capers aren't used in a lot of food in Jerusalem, even though they grow like all over the city.
Oh, wow.
But they're not really used. So I thought that was interesting.
That is. What's wrong with the caper, Jerusalem?
Yeah, I love a caper, let me tell you.
They're an acquired taste. Yeah, I've grown to love them. I didn't love them when I was younger, I don't think. They're quite bitter little things.
Yeah, like anchovies, I guess. Just like little salty balls.
Yeah. Moving on. No bad names to see here.
So you've got like a mix, then you make those into balls or fingers. So that's a quote. I made them into balls, very dill heavy, and then you kind of just fry them off in a little bit of oil. The fish I had was maybe too watery, so the frying wasn't as good as I had hoped, but I kind of wanted to keep them warm anyway, so I put them in the oven covered with some foil to make sure they were cooked through as well. So I did fry them, but they kind of but they were great. Also great. Again, I'm not sure if all this stuff goes together, but they were just stuff that I was interested in. That recipe, fish and caper kebabs, comes with there's also like a burnt aubergine, like pickle or something. Mm-hmm. I didn't make that. And he says to serve with like preserved lemons, which I didn't do. But I really enjoyed that. Again, the deal. But my father-in-law, who I said I would give a shout out to, does like famously doesn't like fish and tried one and enjoyed it. So I was very pleased with myself.
Oh, the ultimate compliment when you convert someone.
They're not fishy at all. Like,
no.
It's just that tastes like a pickle because it's just so dilly, which is great.
So dilly. Yeah,
because
the real dill. Sorry.
Yeah, that was, yeah.
Terrible.
And quickly, my final thing, and the thing I was most excited about making, which Hannah has heard my texting Hannah this whole like last week or so, being like, I've got it, I haven't got it, I can do it, I can't do it. I made brick, which is literally called brick. Didn't make it bricks. Is. I'm not building a house. So it's like a pastry made with a pastry called brick pastry, which I had a bit of a challenge to find. But I've never eaten one before. In like the world, but I've seen them time and time again, and I know that I would love them. You know, and you just you know you're gonna like something, but it's not something that you get around here. And I imagine you can walk through Jerusalem and just pick them up, and they're absolutely incredible. So, brick pastry is like very thin phyllo-esque pastry.
Yeah. Or he says, if you can't find the brick pastry, doesn't he, to use maybe spring roll wrappers or something?
Yeah, spring roll wrappers, which I think is, that's better than phyllo. So it's like laced brick pastry, what I found out. So there's kind of holes in it. Yeah, loved it. But I thought I could find it, but then I couldn't. But shout out to my like local food and drink Facebook group, who I asked where I might find it around here, and they said, and then I went to a shop that had it piled high for £1 a pack, and I was like, so great. Yes, thanks to those guys.
That's so good.
I was just so happy to find it. So making them is all about like timing, because this pastry is so thin and kind of delicate that it dries out really quickly once you get it out of the pack.
Yeah.
I think you can include anything in them. I think they're originally Tunisian, but I think there's also in a lot of like Middle Eastern cultures, they have this, and they use brick pastry to make similar things. But I think the connecting theme is they all have an egg in them.
Yes.
So the recipe in this book is really simple. So it's just chopped flat leaf parsley, spring onions, and then an egg. Spring onions appear a lot in this book.
Yeah, they do.
I don't know if I've noticed that with Ottolenghi's books before, that there's a lot of spring onion. It doesn't seem, but I don't know.
I guess it's that chopped salad kind of element of like freshness or something, and probably maybe easy to come by. I don't know.
Yeah. So that is literally all it is. And I was a bit skeptical, like that sounds a bit weird. Like it's just herbs, an onion and an egg.
But you just crack a raw egg in there.
Yeah.
Is that what you do?
Yeah.
Okay.
You try not to break the yolk. Yeah. So the way you assemble it, so you have some oil that is like hot, not like really, really hot, not searing hot, but hot, a couple of centimeters of that. And then you get like a shallow bowl, which I guess is easier to assemble them. You lay out the pastry, and then you put your parsley, your spring onion, and then you make a well and crack the egg, and you try not to break the yolk because you're supposed to try and get a runny yolk. Yeah. And then you kind of fold it up like a parcel. And I was reading about them in other places, and you can fold the pastry, you know, a bit like a samosa or something like more like a roll, but these ones is more like a parcel. And then you pop it in the oil, like egg side down, for a couple of like about 60 seconds each side,
right,
until it like goes all crispy and lovely, and you take them out and you eat them hot. I didn't manage to get the runny egg for that, but that's okay. I'll forgive myself. It's
next
okay.
next time
I feel like it's an art. I actually ate these for breakfast, like when I was cooking all this stuff.
Yes.
They were so good. He's right, like the flavors taste way more complex than you think, because you've got like the crispy pastry that is like, it tastes kind of like a phyllo pastry, and then the parsley is all fresh and lovely, and spring onion is great, and an egg is great, and I'm here for it.
I really wanted to make them. I had them when I was a kid. My mum and I went on holiday to Tunisia, and that was part of the like breakfast wherever we were staying, was those. They would make them like fresh to order.
Yeah.
I loved them. I thought they were great. But if I remember rightly, the egg was quite runny in a lot of them, which isn't always to everyone's taste. So maybe, you know, it wasn't a bad thing that yours was a little bit more cooked. But eggs in any form. That'd be great. So I mean, Delia get along.
Yeah, love them. Also put one, I had some leftover butternut squash from when I made that spread, and I put butternut squash and an egg and some parsley in one as well. And I thought, try that out.
Nice.
That was great, just for that extra little bit of texture. So fun. Would totally make them again if I was like having a lazy morning and had people over and I wanted to like be impressive, which doesn't happen a lot.
I but, want to be impressive.
How can I be impressive? Make this. Yeah, but I was super excited about it. And I was happy that I got to make them. I found the pastry. So yeah, that was me. Lots of different
Amazing.
Bits and pieces.
Was there anything else that caught your eye that you felt like making?
Oh my God. So much stuff.
So much stuff.
Yeah. I always go through and like label them, the things I want to make. I ran out of labels. Like, can you see how many I've got? Like, I'm showing her the book. I wanted to make shakshuka.
She's got loads of like those mini little like post-it label things sticking out of the side of the book, which is why you're a far more organized person than me. Mine is just like oil splattered with like dog-eared pages.
Yeah, I wanted to make the shakshuka. Because it feels like a classic. It feels like it started a thing, you know?
Yeah.
But I didn't, wouldn't have had the time, wouldn't have fitted in with my life style.
And what about the whole baking section as well, I thought?
Yes.
Great. And there was so much I wanted to make in there. There's loads of cheese pastries. Oh, God. There was this one called Mutabak, I think, and it was like goat's cheese in phyllo pastry. And then you pour over this like sweet syrup. My God, my mouth is actually watering talking about it because I just think that sounds so great. And there was like burekas, which are little cheese parcels as well. And there was like a herb pie with something in like Greek, like loads of greens. Yeah. I don't know if it was chard or spinach or something, and cheese. Oh, I nearly made the red pepper and baked egg galettes, which were just like a puff pastry.
Yes, they look great.
Like a pepper and onion mix with the egg in the middle. They looked lovely and not very labor intensive actually at all. There was just so much good stuff.
So much stuff. Yeah, there's like a lamb shawarma recipe that looked incredible. Like you cook a whole lamb leg in like a, I guess like shawarma-y spices. Yeah, all of it. Like I said, also the meatball section was great. I'd definitely be coming back to this book, I think.
Yes, 100%.
Again, when I want to be impressive.
Does this mean that you are an Ottolenghi convert, Victoria?
No, I think I'm a Sami Tamimi convert. I'm team Tamimi. No, that's not true. Like, yeah, maybe it does. I feel like, let's put this in the context of all the books we've done recently. This is a lot different.
So
it was really exciting that I felt like I got to use like vegetables and things that all weren't beige. And
not a bit of butter in sight here, babe.
No, olive not oil all the way.
Even a single little bit. Shall we rate?
Let's rate.
Before we rate, I'll remind you of our rating system. We've got 5 categories and they are...
Why categories? 5 categories.
This blatant racism here. Can't say a fucking thing.
No, just that you sounded like an auctioneer. But 5 categories. Starting at...
An auctioneer.
10,000 euros.
So the first one is usability and accessibility. That's one. Recipes easy to read, easy to follow. The second is ingredients. Are they easy to find? Things you'd have to hand. Third is aesthetics. Fourth is veggie friendliness. And 5 is inspirability. And each episode we change what we're rating out of based on the chefs or the books or something that's kind of stood out to us. Like for Delia, as I just mentioned, we rated her out of eggs since like a third of her book is based on eggs or all about eggs.
All about eggs.
Do you think she has that tattooed on her somewhere?
No, she has Lesbian Avenue tattooed on her somewhere.
And for someone
Jamie
else.
Jamie Oliver. We did pictures of Jamie Oliver because there's an awful lot of them in that book. Loads.
So for Yotam and Sammy, we are going to rate them out of something I've had a mini rant about in this episode, which is crushed garlic cloves.
Crushed garlic.
Because they are in many recipes. And actually, just outside of this book, it's something, that I've noticed across a lot of Ottolenghi's recipes. And I'm still a bit confused about if they should always be crushed or if they should sometimes be minced. But so maybe you can answer that one for us, Yotam.
Yeah. And Sammy.
And Sammy, sorry. But yeah. I'm blaming. How many crushed garlic cloves. Are you giving this out of 5?
Okay. I think it's going to be a good one for me today.
Oh.
So, I can't be positive for the whole episode and then be like, it's a 2-star. I hate Ottolenghi. I don't hate Ottolenghi at all. So usability and accessibility, I'm going to say yes, because I didn't have any trouble making anything. Like, I felt like there was no techniques that I couldn't do. Which is good.
Yeah, exactly.
And it felt like, yeah, I was able to do a lot of the recipes that I wanted to do. Ingredients used, I'm going to give 0.5 points.
Okay.
Because there was still some, you know, the brick pastry wasn't easy to come by, but I could have substituted it. There was, you know, the date syrup I couldn't find. You know, there's a couple of things that aren't quite full Ottolenghi yet. So,
yeah.
And there was a few recipes that I kind of skipped over because I was like, I'm never going to be able to find whatever that is, like some spice blend. So it gets 0.5 because whilst it's okay, it's not, we're not in the full thing.
Yeah.
Aesthetics, yes, we talked about it. It's an absolutely beautiful book. It was a pleasure to look through it. Yes, it's very veggie friendly, I thought, even though there is meat and fish in there. But like Hannah said, there's no butter to be seen. It's all olive oil, very little dairy apart from in the kind of savory pies section.
Yeah.
And I was very inspired. I was very excited about it. So that gets a point. I was very happy to have it in my life for the pod. So that is 4.5 crushed garlic cloves from me. I don't know what you're gonna do with the extra 0.5, but we'll find a way.
Oh, fine, it'll just come up in another recipe.
Yeah, exactly.
4.5, that's nice.
I know.
Wow.
Yeah,
interesting. Exact same from me.
Oh,
exact same.
Oh, so we got 2 halves of a garlic clove. So we've got 2 halves. We've got 9 garlic cloves.
Out of 10. Yeah, I think, yeah, to your point, I think we're lucky, as we've said before, that we're in London. It's very easy for us to find a lot of things like pomegranate molasses or amber, things like that. But it's not always the case. So I think it would be kind of remiss of us to assume that they're easy to get for everyone. But apart from that, I loved it. I thought it was great.
Yeah.
And even though sometimes there's like blends or like recipes that he mentions that you should use as part of a kind of larger recipe, at the back they've got condiment recipes where you can kind of make a lot of the sauces yourself, and usually they're made up of things that we can find quite easily, which I thought was quite good as well.
Ooh. Great. It's a hit. Thanks, Sammy and Yotam. You've given us a lot of joy this past couple of weeks as we cook from it.
Yes, very, very, very joyful. Loved it.
Next. Onwards.
Yes.
So we are returning to France for our next book. But I'm being positive about this one because there's a lot of love for it in the world. And it's a woman. We love women. It's not a fancy pants French book. So it's French Provincial Cooking by Elizabeth David, which came up on this the list, which were, and mine's arrived. And yeah, it's a bit more of, there's a lot of prose. It's a bit more prosy than a recipe book. It's a paperback. The one I've got is a paperback. I'm not going to say I'm excited because I haven't really looked at it, and I don't only know how I feel about French food. But I feel hopeful that there's going to be some fun. I'm not going to be fucking around with some stupid technique, and it's going to just be like good, hearty food.
Yeah, I have a bit of nostalgia for this one because I know my mum had some of her books, and I feel like she's kind of that era of like Elizabeth David, obviously, but like Sophie Grigson and like Claudia Roden and people like that, this kind of wave of female chefs that changed things up a bit. So I'm excited to, I don't remember a lot about those books. So I'm quite excited to read it again.
Mm. Yeah, I'm excited. So we'll see you for that. Quickly, before we go, I feel like we should mention that we're looking for suggestions for season 2 of the Cookbook Circle.
Yeah.
So we're only a few episodes away from the end of season 1, and we've used the list that we've talked about a lot. But we want to hear your thoughts on a theme or books or an ingredient that you think that we should focus on for season 2, so we can kind of craft that to see what you think. So please talk to us on Instagram, send us an email. Yes. All that good stuff.
Yeah, we've had some really good suggestions so far. And it's interesting to kind of see themes. Even if people are just telling us books that they want us to cover, there's usually some kind of thread that's binding them together. So we'd love to hear more because you're the ones who are listening to this. So
yeah,
it's kind of on you. You have to make your bed and lie in it, all right?
Yeah.
But that's it.
All right. Thank you guys so much for listening.
Thank you for listening. Bye.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Cookbook Circle. Don't forget to subscribe wherever you listen to your podcast. And if you've enjoyed it, please leave us a review as it helps others to find us. You can see how the recipes from this episode turned out on our Instagram at Cookbook Circle. And if you make anything from the books we talk about, please don't forget to tag us. See you next time. Bye.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.